Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Titan Company Limited's Q4 and FY25 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. C.K. Venkataraman, Managing Director, Titan Company Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. It's wonderful to meet at the end of a wonderful quarter. Performance very, very satisfying across segments, across countries. And clearly, despite the surround being challenging, whether it is gold rate on the one side or pressures on discretionary consumption, I think the innovation engines of Titan Company, execution excellence on all fronts, assets in the air, on the ground, partners of exceptional caliber, deep and wide across the world now, and the tens of thousands of what we broadly call Titanians, putting their heart and soul into everything that they do, has delivered a very good performance, very satisfying. And over to you for the questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Manoj Menon from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. First of all, good luck to Venkat for all the future endeavors, and good luck to Ajay as you take on the new role. Good luck and God bless to both. A couple of questions from my side on the jewelry business. One, given the incessant sort of price increase which you have seen in the gold commodity, just some snippets from you in terms of your research as well as anecdotal evidence on what the consumer is telling you, right? I mean, so is the consumer cutting back on the volume side of it? Is the consumer asking for more 18-karat? And more importantly, how do you see this evolving, and what are the plans in place? That's the first one.
Thanks, Manoj. Just reminding you that this is effective 1st January, the change.
Yes, sir.
We have still a way to go. But thanks for your good wishes. And answering your question on what the consumer is saying, so two, three things are coming out. And this is now, I'm seeing this over the last several months. As gold prices have kind of clipped up so sharply, we are seeing in the sub-50,000 price band, very specifically, more in gold and a little bit in studded also, there is an impact on the consumer sentiment there. Now, some of it is us vacating price points because simply gold price goes up, the same product goes into a certain higher price band. That is one part of the story. But there is continued, let's say, customer sentiment in that lower price band where we are seeing some buyers being a little reticent. Second piece is, yes, customers are more open to 18-karat gold, though we don't really have the full information as yet. We have just launched some collections in 18-karat gold in certain parts of the country for traditional customers as well. And we hope that we'll see good response. And I know that in CaratLane, we've launched something in 9 carats as well. So there is early traction. And I think more and more customers are going to be open to lower caratage simply because the price point has become quite a bit. On the higher price bands, while there is buyer growth, we are seeing some of the customers actually scaling down the complexity of product they are willing to buy. So it means that if earlier they were open to buying a higher making charge product, they are sliding down a bit, but they are still buying a certain quantum of gold and a certain value. So there is some indications there. And if I were to answer your question on what are customers telling us in terms of our conversation, they certainly are feeling the pinch, and therefore they are looking for solutions, both on terms of lightweight jewelry, lower caratage jewelry, as well as probably lower making charge jewelry. So, you know, they still want gold, but they are looking at how they can manage it within their budgets.
Understood. Thank you, Ajay. I just want a quick follow-up and then I'll have a second question. So the quick follow-up here is, if, let's say, in a hypothetical scenario, because end of the day, gold is just a commodity, if gold corrects 20%, 30%, and probably stays there, I know that it may not last for longer, so I'm not taking a commodity view here. You know, in the interim, consumers may have moved from 20 to 18. Does it have some sort of, you know, let's say, an impact on your medium-term absolute revenue, you know, situation?
Actually, we would welcome any gold price correction because a lot more customers will come in the market. Evidence of that was seen when the finance minister had reduced the duties last year and so many fence-sitters kind of just jumped in. So it's the best situation to be in. It also helps us improve margins actually on various fronts. So actually we would welcome it, and any value or ticket size drop being compensated by a jump in number of buyers is a fabulous situation to be in.
Absolutely.
Because we can cultivate them.
That's a fair one, sir. And quickly on the second one, as I understand, the diamond prices, let's say in the wholesale market, has declined materially over the last few years, whereas in the retail market, it is probably flat. Now, I'm thinking from a consumer point of view who, let's say, bought, you know, diamond from any jeweler 2, 3, 4 years back with a, you know, let's say an explicit or implicit understanding that I can actually come and exchange it at the market price. Is there a situation where consumers are coming and looking for an exchange and realizing that, you know, my diamond prices is not inflated at all, rare gold? And does that have any implication for, let's say, what, you know, he or she is buying today in an exchange? Is he preferring more gold over studded or diamonds rather?
So, one clarification that there are different behaviors in the solitaire segment, and especially the bigger sizes, 1 carat, 2 carat plus, and then smaller carat sizes in solitaires, and then the smalls. More than 90% of our studded, 95% of our studded business is non-solitaires, which means they are smalls. Have the prices really come down in wholesale market or in retail? No. In solitaires, there's a different story. 1 carat plus, 2 carat plus in the wholesale, they have come down. But if I were to go back 5 years ago, if somebody has bought, vis-a-vis 5 years ago, the price has not really, I mean, it went up and it's come down. So the index is a little difficult to kind of mathematically conclude it because it's to do with the type of diamond, fancy, shaped, big, small, spec, VVS, SI. There are simply too many elements, but I'm just giving an index feel to it. So this is at the wholesale level also. And in retail, certainly anybody who's bought diamonds from us 5 years back is not going to experience a drop. They may say, okay, it's not really appreciated much. But somebody who's bought it 2 years back may think that the price has come down, but actually that is more narrative in the media that he might be reading. Whereas when she comes to the store, she may say there may be a 5-6% impact. So, but coming to the question you asked, because of this, let's say narrative or otherwise, if this perception exists, are people saying, let me stick, go to gold? There is a bunch of people who are saying, especially the high carat solitaire buyer, and there's a very small number, by the way, in the entire year that we sell to them, that customer has become a little wary of using the solitaire big stone as a means of investment. And therefore, because the price volatility is saying, let's see where this settles and let's see if it starts forming up. So they are holding back. Are these guys going and buying gold? Some of them may be doing so. I don't have exact data to correlate. But we do know that some of our high lifetime value customers are all feeling gold is certainly the flavor at this point in time. And they have no hesitation in buying gold, whereas they may have some hesitation in buying these solitaires. On studded small stones, I don't think this story is at all playing out the way we might be imagining, and that is more than 90% of our strategy. So different stories sitting here and different kinds of segments, and very, you know, we are also leveraging that. And by the way, in on the solitaire side, smaller stone sizes, we are seeing a whopping increase in buyers. And at overall level, studded buyers is outpacing gold buyers, whether solitaire or otherwise. Since not now, but the last 2 quarters, and it carries on into this month. April month also, it has been that way. So actually, the at a buyer level, the story is different from the value level that you're seeing. I don't know if I've answered you or confused you, but I'm just giving you 3-4 different insights.
And I'll have to listen to the transcript once again, sir. Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avi from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to spend some time on the jewelry margin. Could you please help clarify this overhead management which you carried out this quarter, and how sustainable are these gains? Essentially, the context is that despite a weakening mix, we have seen almost 12% standalone EBITDA margin, and hence, is there an upside possibility to that 11 to 11.5% range that you were indicating in prior to this quarter?
So Avi, Ashok here, actually 11.9%, if you think about domestic jewelry business, it's kind of 11.6. You can see in our disclosure that there has been higher primary for international business, and they had some positive impact on the reported numbers. Okay. But 11.6 nevertheless had element of small element of operating leverage as well as some hedging gains sitting it. Whenever robust growth happens, some element of operating leverage coming in jewelry business is quite normal, and which has happened. So it is not that extraordinary effort to squeeze out the normal cost which we need to invest for the growth of the jewelry business. It is just the scale going up for last 2-3 quarters has given that benefit. Of course, we have been mindful of what cost we are incurring and how we are incurring, but it is combination of operating leverage as well as some hedging gain, which you are seeing that, you know, studded ratio is slightly lower, but still we are able to deliver. As far as coming to 11 to 11.5% margin guidance, I think that stays. We are not guiding you for any upside, considering the uncertainty of gold prices and many uncertainties for future. 11 to 11.5% seems to be more reasonable to think about.
Got it, sir. Fairly clear. Sir, and the second and last bit is on the demand side. Now, you did clearly allude towards the consumer behavior asking for more value, more making charge, and we've been able to deliver that in this quarter as well, it seems like. Now, if I were to kind of look at this going forward for FY26, how would you parse the growth? Are you in a scenario where, you know, the last year is giving you confidence of sustaining upwards of 15%? If you could give some sense on how should we look at the next year. That's all from my side.
Sorry, what is 15%?
Sales growth. Sorry, jewelry sales growth. When I say how should you, you know, if you were to look at your earlier mid-year targets and what kind of is expected for the next few years on a simple average basis, it does imply upwards of 15% to reach that 2.5 times. And that's context where I was coming.
So that's the derived figure. Yeah. Okay. So I think demand outlook has been driven, especially in this last quarter, and even to an extent in quarter three, by the average ticket size growth, which has certainly been influenced by the increase in gold prices. And therefore, buyer sentiment and buyer growths have been rather muted. Now, how this will play out as we go forward, very difficult. But certainly from our end, we continue to target high double-digit growths. Whether it comes in value, whether it comes out of buyer or ticket size or a combination of the two, that is a very quarter-to-quarter fluctuating scenario, very difficult to predict. But certainly we we are targeting and we are preparing and aiming for these high double-digit growths. What turns out, of course, depends on the situation.
But Ajay, do you see international at risk because of this tariff talk, etc., or is that not anything to get so much bothered about?
Dini will try and answer that for you.
Yeah. Hi, this is Dini here. Tariffs, as of the way we are seeing things now in both in the US market, it's not really cost any significant thing, but that we've not taken any price increases as yet. We're waiting. We will watch how the whole situation unfolds, and then basis that, depending on what competition also does, it's quite likely that if tariffs go up, then we will take price increases. That how that's going to play out, will it mute demand? At this point in time, the view would be that it doesn't look likely. And it also looks like between India and the U.S., the bilateral trade agreement is progressing well, and it looks that we will reach some kind of an agreement on that. I mean, Trump has just announced that he struck a deal with the U.K. first, and since India has already done a similar deal with U.K., India and the U.S. doing a deal looks quite likely.
Got it. Fairly clear. I'll come back in the queue for the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Videsha Sheth from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, team. Thank you for the opportunity and congrats on the numbers. My first question was on the competitive landscape. Last quarter, you had mentioned that the element or the competition element on the gold pricing had stabilized, but on making charges, it was still elevated. So given the inflation that we've seen in the fourth quarter, can you comment on how the landscape has changed? That was my first question.
I think it is broadly in the same zone as what I said last time. Competitive intensity continues to be very high. Price warriors are there. On gold rates, we have not seen that much activity. Making charge continues to be. It fluctuates, but by and large, I would say it remains what I said last time.
Got it. Got it. And the second question was on the studded jewelry part of things. As a category leader, how would you think about reviving consumption in this segment going forward? While the DBS partnership is a step in that direction, but any other, have you identified any additional initiatives on this front that could stimulate demand?
Actually, on studded, as I said, there are 2-3 segments. You think of it as solitaire. Within that, there is lower sizes and bigger sizes. Lower sizes, the demand has already revived, and we've in fact aggressively pushed forth on using our distribution network, as well as, you know, our ability to source and supply. So that we are seeing very good growth. So that's been one lever. We've pivoted in a way from larger carat sizes to smaller ones, and it's showing up in numbers very well. In terms of jewelry, studded jewelry, if I think of our portfolio across Tanishq, CaratLane, Mia, and if you were to look at it in the sub 50,000, sub 1 lakh range, I think we've still been able to clock in maybe early double-digit growth in that area, thanks to the portfolio play. And therefore, pushing that portfolio play, including network expansion across CaratLane, Mia, and distribution depth, even in the Tanishq stores, I think that is the second lever. Third lever that we are really looking at is reducing the price points for customers by looking at lower caratage. So if people have been used to buying 18 carat studded, they're also now beginning to get comfortable with 14, and in case of CaratLane, they've also introduced 9 carat. So these are 3-4 different levers, but nevertheless, desire creation and excitement by each brand continues to be at the heart of it all, because finally it's an adornment product and she's wearing it to experience an emotion. So I think that continues to be a very big lever.
Understood. That was helpful. Just a small follow-up to this on the CaratLane you launching the 9 carat, jewelry under 9 carat, carat as well. But given it's not hallmarked in nature, how do you expect consumers to react?
Hi, this is Shoman.
Yeah.
We launched this 9-carat jewelry sometimes around Valentine, and we saw good response. This is not hallmark. We are not claiming it is hallmark. But it is stated as 9-carat diamond jewelry. It is sold as 9-carat diamond jewelry. But it is also quite likely that 9-carat is going to come under, you know, hallmarking very, very soon. It is in very, very advanced stage. So I think that will settle down very soon. And otherwise, we saw decent response. And with the gold rate increase, I think it's an alternate option for customers who are also looking at adornment other than, you know, just investment.
Got it. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arnab Mitra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi team, and congratulations on a great performance across all the businesses. My question again was on studded, and you know, where I'm coming from is, you know, when we anecdotally speak to a lot of people who historically have worn diamonds, these are the rich families, that segment seems to almost suggest anecdotally that we are not going to buy diamond, or we are going to buy much lesser of diamonds going ahead. But your growth rates, buyer growths are all very good. So are we like dealing with completely different sets of consumers here? Are you getting the growth from people who are buying diamond for the first time in your view? Just trying to understand this disconnect that, you know, a lot of people feel between when you speak to anecdotally and versus actual numbers which show good growth for you.
Yeah, actually, there are many segments. Some of us anecdotally speak to only some other people like us. And they may be all, you know, already diamond buyers and fairly well off and very evolved diamond buyers. So, and again, if you happen to be speaking to the type who is seeking solitaires as an investment buyer, then that's another sub-segment within them. So I would say that there are simply too many different segments, and the segment whom you are referring to, the ones who buy diamonds for investment, is a rather, rather small percentage of the total studded buyers existing, or even if I think of the penetration of, I mean, amongst new, of course, new studded buyers, there's a vast ocean out there. So I'm not even saying, certainly there are new people coming in, but even existing studded segment, this is a rather small percentage of people that we may be anecdotally receiving such pieces of information from. And even they might be fluctuating in their behavior. When it comes to adornment, they may have no qualms in buying smaller stones, etc. And when it comes to investment, they may be having a different point of view.
Right. So from the data that you gave, which is buyer growth being pretty strong, that the fact that the value growth is not keeping up is purely a function of the fact that gold is a smaller component of the jewelry, and therefore the unit price hasn't gone up as much as gold.
No. See, buyer growth is higher in studded than gold. But gold has been rather dull because of the sub 50,000 segment. Okay. Now, that's the only piece here. At the high value end, is there a customer for studded jewelry? Certainly. Value growth will come. It's a mix of both, you know. I don't think... I cannot conclude that growth will come only in the lower end in studded and higher end in gold, nothing like that. There is opportunity both ways. In fact, India is premiumizing, and there are a lot more Indians who are happy to spend on high value studded as well. So this is not a commentary of this piece at all. There is opportunity in both. I was just making the point, even in the sub 1 lakh studded, we are seeing, because of portfolio play, we are seeing a early double-digit growth, which is not a commentary on what is happening on the higher value study.
Got it. And my last question was just on this, we had obviously a lot of news around lease costs going up during the quarter due to tariff, speculation. So has it impacted this quarter in any way for you? And is there any lingering impact going forward on that? That would be my last question.
So you see, like, of course, you are right that as a knee-jerk reaction to gold on lease rate has gone up, almost doubled and more than doubled, and it is settling down now. But more than that, even gold price, you know, gold rate also impact our financing cost, because now the same quantity of GOL is far more expensive, 30-40%, and I have to pay interest now on that 30-40%. So just the rate increase had a small impact, But overall, gold price increase had a larger impact for the full year as far as GUL interest cost is concerned. But the good news is that after that, GUL rates have been settling down, and I think they are now about 75-80 basis points above the historical number. And we will see how does they play out in FY26.
Okay, thanks so much, sir. That's it from my side. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just one question. I hear from the market that the wholesale price of LGD have again crashed in recent months. What are you picking up about the state of LGD retailers, and is LGD coming up in your conversations also, if you can update us on your latest views on entering the LGD space?
So I can share with you what I have picked up about the retail and wholesale prices of LGD. Certainly the wholesale price was anyway coming down continuously, and it continues to drop. And I think that will not stop, because even automation will happen and many other tech developments and productivity developments will push costs down like any tech product. But interestingly, even on the retail side, many of the players were retailing LGD products at roughly 60,000 to 50,000 rupees a carat. Now, this is to be taken with a pinch of salt, because the caratage is not exactly straightforward. That has now come down to 30,000 for many players, barring one or two players who are continuing to retail it at 60,000. And there are new players coming in all the time. So our estimate is that the market will continue to drop the retail price of LGD per carat, and that will make it much, much more affordable. And I'm not sure how the unit economics is going to play out for a bunch of these players unless we see a large number of totally new buyers coming in to stud it, which of course, if it happens, is great news for the industry overall. So it is a choppy situation. But nevertheless, even at 30,000 rupees a carat retail price, the markups are quite healthy. So I suspect there will be more price warriors who may come. But this is just to give you an overall narrative, and where this will end, very difficult to predict.
And what about your thoughts on entering this space? The drop in prices, does it make it completely unviable, or would you give it a thought at some stage?
We'll keep thinking about it, is the best I can say, because the stability has not been reached, and it's not that everybody is coming and asking for LGDs, etc. And many players are jumping in anyway. So I think it's too premature to comment.
Okay. Thanks. That's it from me.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just wanted some clarity on this hedging gain. So my understanding was the purpose that we hedge is that the EBIT margins of the business remain unaffected by any volatility in the gold price. But you're saying that the reason why margins are higher is because of some hedging gains. And the second question related to this is that when the gold price is going up, we should actually have a hedging loss, because we are recovering higher from the consumer, and to offset that inventory gain, actually we are entering into a future contract, so that contract should give us a hedging loss. So can you just address these two issues, gaps in my understanding, please?
So gold is, you know, volatile at this point of time, and we have if I can use the word contango gain, when you know you are doing forwards in gold thing, when you do the future, there is a different economics. When you do the forwards with the gold on international exchanges, then there is a different economics, and we have been able to do some of that transactions in quarter four, which gives us contango gain, and that is what the region is. And it's not so, you know, because every time it keeps moving, and there are thousands of transactions which get squared up on every day basis from our side. So overall basis, when I compare that, we have a small hedging gain. We are not, and your idea is correct. When we move from cash flow to fair value, if you remember, idea is to not disturb P&L through hedging actions, But we have contango gains because we are able to do forward transaction on international exchange.
Understood, sir. Understood. So this contango gain is a one-time permanent gain or will it reverse next quarter?
No, so there is a part which is a timing-wise, the period of forward will kind of keep accruing, and then there could be a part which can reverse also, depending on the gold price.
Okay, so part permanent and part phasing. Is that how I should take it?
Yeah.
Understood. Sir, second question is on the outlook for jewelry growth next year. So see, while the gold price inflation has definitely dampened the buying sentiment, number of buyers are coming lower, etc. But still, there is some amount of inflation which is sort of at least partially benefiting us because the gold price has, let's say, doubled in the last 3 to 4 years almost. So the person will not cut down his volume by half. He might cut down his volume, but there is still a net gain in the overall outlay per customer. And that has benefited, and you have done close to about 25% kind of top line growth this quarter. So my question is that if we assume that the gold price remains where it is currently, then should we expect this 25% kind of top line growth to continue for the next 2 to 4 quarters?
So Percy, this is Ajay here. The 23 or 24% growth that you talked about, I'm not sure it's 25, maybe domestic primary sales growth reported NSV is showing up as 23 point something percent. But that percentage is because there was also some amount of upstocking that happened in the year end because of an early Akshaya Tritiya, right? So if I go down to the secondary growth, actually the retail growth, it is around 20. So I just wanted to correct you there.
Okay.
Certainly, what you said is true. When gold prices are going up sequentially, there is a benefit, there is a value growth, and therefore there's a ticket size growth that we see. And in our mind, as I mentioned in an earlier question, we are certainly planning and targeting and also hoping for a healthy double-digit growth, either driven by ticket size or by buyer or by both. So the outlook for jewelry continues to be positive. If I may pick up one or two other threads, while we've spoken a little bit about the headwinds on price of gold, see, this year there is a very good wedding season in quarter one. Last year there was elections in quarter one and there were no wedding dates. Infrastructure spending by government has continued and will continue for the first 4-5 months, which was not there last year. There is also the largest from the finance ministry on the IT for a large number of people in the country. Maybe not directly, but at least the secondary and tertiary, second order, third order benefits of that will start flowing into the economy. There is also a lot of liquidity being injected. So a lot of positive tailwinds are there, but despite the uncertainties that exist in the market. So our outlook for jewelry, not just for the year, but for the next few years, continues to be bullish. And we are committed to driving healthy double-digit growth year on year.
Got it, sir. If I might just push this a little bit, can we say that the growth rate trajectory has possibly, at least in the next couple of years, moved up from a high teens to slightly higher than 20%?
I can't say that because that would be getting ahead of myself. We happen to have delivered a 20% growth in one quarter. We have to be a little bit more careful in making those statements. I would still say it is healthy double-digit growth, whether it is going to be 15 or 20 or something in between the two. We would still leave it at that. Between 15 to 20 is a fairly good rate, I would say.
Okay, sir. Okay. That's very helpful. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Gutka from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, team. Congrats on a good set of numbers. Sir, I have one question on the franchisee format. So my analytics are suggesting that you're piloting a format where capital will be provided by franchisee and you'll be running the store. I think Kalyan runs similar kind of store. Is this true? And if it's true, then historically, capital has never been a challenge for us. Just wanted to get your comments on this.
So we have experience format. One is, of course, there is we are always learning because we respect competition and what they do, and there's always something to learn from them. So we study what they are doing and what a few others have done also in different ways. The second piece is we have also many associates and partners who may not have the succession planning in their own firms or in their family, and many of them have been with us for a long time. So we also start thinking about how do we kind of ensure some continuity, and yet you know, they have an ownership because they have a relationship in that neighborhood, in that catchment. There's a lot of respect, and we also have a lot of care, you know, because they've been with us for 25-30 years. So that's another factor that we are keeping in mind, and therefore yes, we will continue to experiment with formats. It's not so much from capital scarcity, but also from the point of view of, is there some merit and advantage in doing so? Because increasingly the business is more complex also, and many franchisees may not have that level of organization depth to be able to manage some of these things. So we are also looking at it from that perspective. But having said that, as an organization and as a brand, we are not wanting to run too many stores on our own, and especially not beyond the top 10-12 cities in the country, because it's more complex for us to manage. Whereas our presence is across 300 odd towns. So we will still be a largely franchised network with limited cities where we will do, and that too only stores where we have large turnovers at stake.
Got it, got it. Sir, and just one bookkeeping question. What is the store opening guidance for Tanishq for FY26 domestic business? How many stores we are planning to open?
40 to 50 stores. But
okay,
more
great,
importantly,
sir,
we are also looking at 50 to 60 stores of existing stores being either renovated or relocated or adding additional space. When I say additional space, it's like adding an entire store. So a transformation program is underway in the last 2-3 years, and it will continue in the next 18 months. And the headroom on that front is rather more high compared to even the headroom on the network. While we'll continue to grow the network into new catchments and cities, even this is a big piece of our growth.
Got it, got it. And the 50-60 stores, most of them will be L1 format, right, for you?
No, no. No, no, no. Most of the, in fact, new ones are likely to be franchised L2 or L3. Very few will be L1.
No, no, sir, I'm talking about the renovation part. You told the 50-60 stores,
no,
are planning to renovate.
No. Yeah. Those are also mixed L1, L2, L3, all formats. We have, in fact, transformed 160 odd stores in the last 2 years, which are a mix of franchise and company.
Great, sir. Wishing you all the best, sir, for future quarters. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devanshu Bansal from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Congratulations on a great performance, and thanks for taking my question. Sir, from a balance sheet perspective, there has been an increase in our working capital, and that has sort of led to some fall in our return ratios also. This is obviously due to increasing gold price and the related fall in volume consumption. How do you plan to deal with this as gold prices are continuing to increase? So there is a significant working capital increase. So how do you plan to deal with this?
Yeah, so largely you are right. This is all on account of gold price increase. And of course, some investment of inventory is done in some of the catchment, you know. If gold price continue to rise like this, while we have some levers of increasing our GOL level, etc., but it would certainly require some more capital investment from our side, and for which our balance sheet can be leveraged, it is capable. But idea would be then to leverage GOL more. And it is very unpredictable ki what would be the gold price trajectory going forward. We will wait, watch and see, and kind of keep responding to the, you know, evolving situation. But yes, you are right. In the current context, a little bit of strain on working capital has come in. And the year-end number which you see, Ajoy had spoken about Akshaya Tritiya being early. There has been upstocking towards end of March. So the balance sheet number which you see is a point number. That's not the story for the full year.
Understood. Ashok, also, if you are open to sort of call out the exact quantum of the hedging gain this quarter, if you are calling that out?
No, it's not that significant that we should call it out. It's not that significant. But it is one small factor in that marginal EBIT margin which you see, you know. So there's nothing so significant that we start calling it out.
Understood. So last question from my end. The overall jewelry UCT is 20%. Can you call out the secondary growth in studded sales? So reported is 12%. What is secondary growth in studded sales for Q4?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Studded growth... I'll tell you 1 minute. Huh? Yeah, it's around 12%, I think. 10-12%. 11 or 12%. I don't have the exact figure here with me.
Almost similar. Sir, to what has been
almost before. Similar. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough, sir. Thanks for taking my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. My question is on industry practice of, you know, exchange and cashback in case of studded jewelry. Now, you know, in a hypothetical scenario, if, you know, the consumer behavior changes and if, you know, consumers start sort of, you know, exchanging more studded jewelry in future and buy gold jewelry, or, you know, basically take cash back. So that could have a significant impact on profitability for overall industry. So I was just wondering, is this something that comes up, you know, in board discussions or industry association discussions? As a industry leader, how comfortable are you with this policy that you have today where, you know, basically anyone who has potentially bought any studded from you in the past 10-15 years can always come back and give it to you at 10% lower price or 15% lower price versus the current pricing? And that's because, you know, partly there's a big gap between your procurement costs for diamond and your retail pricing for diamond. So, and I want to understand from a risk management perspective, is this something which you think about?
Yeah, Venkat here. Just some perspectives. You know, in India, the category of jewelry is so much about store of value. And in a way, the exchange policies reflect that customer need. And therefore, even the relatively lower gross margins in this industry in India, because of the store of value concept, because customers don't want to lose when they exchange. I'm talking in general. I'll come to the diamond jewelry point in a minute. So that depresses the markup potential in India versus, let's say, in the US, it's not a store of value, it's an accessory. So the markups are like other accessories. Now, in a way, related to the store of value concept, because also of the connections to culture, tradition, feeling of wealth, people don't like to sell jewelry. They exchange jewelry, but unless there is a calamity in the family, they don't sell their jewelry. And it's in a way related to the store of value and, of course, also related to the dhan aspect of jewelry. And therefore, like we have had this policy for, you know, you can exchange gold as well as diamond jewelry for cash. That policy has been there for more than 2 decades. But the incidence is really, really in the decimals, in the small decimals because of this. So unless generational views on the subject changes, which may be 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and that's a very long time for us to talk about here. This is not a, because it has not materialized in its actual incidence on this. And even what you're asking, which is people coming in with diamond jewelry, exchanging it for gold, that incidence is very, very low.
Understood. So basically, exchange proportion is broadly similar, and that has not changed whether it is for gold or diamond in the last 3 years.
Gold to diamond, yes, because diamond is an upgrade product for those who never had diamonds.
Yeah, and you know, just to add a little bit, I have personally seen many customers be extremely delighted when they come back after several years and say, wow, my diamonds, my gold, everything is appreciated. That feel-good factor is so much that she is very happy to, in fact, upgrade and
add
a lot more. And therefore, the upsell we see on exchanges out of that goodwill. And in fact, the statement they make is, only a Tata company like this would give me such appreciation, I'm seeing. So actually, we see a lot of positivity, and the risk factor hypothetically does exist, but it hasn't yet played out like this so far. And we hope it doesn't.
Very helpful, very clear. Second question is, in FY25, your standalone jewelry growth was 21% and EBIT growth was 12%. Now with, you know, you maintaining your EBIT margin guidance and, you know, ballpark expecting growth to be in 15-20%, do you think FY26, even after, you know, notwithstanding the volatility in gold we have seen and the mix changes that we continue to see, you think that that gap will now narrow? I mean, your EBIT growth also will be ballpark in that range, 15 to 20 or maybe a couple of percent points short of top line growth?
If we are going to maintain EBIT margin, then it has to be. Otherwise, there is no way we will be able to maintain EBIT margin. So that extent, that's the expectation. But, you know, market is very, very, you know, while this is the current view, and if circumstances change dramatically, then we may have to get back to you guys talking about it. But right now, whatever we see, with that we think, yes, we should be able to grow at the similar pace.
I'll just add one more piece. Our priority to continue to grow top line and acquire customers is the highest, and sometimes we may be willing to invest some of that margin into growth, and that's been the outlook, and that's also been the guidance from our board and everybody. So margins may sometimes come down if the competitive situation or the consumer sentiment is adverse.
Thank you so much, and congratulations, Ajoy, on your appointment as MD.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. I also had a question on competition. So, you know, in an environment of, there are two aspects to it. In an environment of sharp increase in gold prices, are you saying that, you know, we have not seen a pickup from, say, regional, private, smaller guys who probably would be sitting on higher inventory gains on schemes, etc.? Has that intensity not accelerated? And the second part to that was, you explained gold metal loan quite well. I just wanted to understand, is the availability of the gold metal loan and the fact that, you know, it is stretched because of the higher gold prices also a source of competitive advantage for you, because, you know, you're Titan and you can kind of, you know, get it at a lower rate, as well as, you know, have probably, you know, infinite kind of working capital limit. So just could you shed some light on these two aspects? Thanks.
Yeah, so gold on loan, your observations are right. We are in best position in the industry as far as India is concerned to leverage gold on loan, get the best rate and a substantial amount of limit without any concern from the banks. Compared to other where they would kind of beyond a point will not like to extend. So that gives us an competitive advantage and ability to invest in inventory at higher gold prices. The first question was
on the demand side, competitive intensity. Yes, those who don't hedge do sit on inventory gains and they're willing to let go of margin and they play it out in the form of heavy discounting on making charges. And it is not just restricted to small players, it is also even larger players. Not every large player is hedging 100%. So it does play out. So, yeah, but, you know, we also then respond in whichever way is appropriate for that market. And therefore, it's a complex, constant, gain share, invest in providing value to the customer in some form. Brand, customer experience, product design, making charges, everything comes together as a value proposition.
Because my question is just why again this question was because the pace of gold rise has been so sharp this time. Maybe that there could be more investment by large private, small private, regionals in this. But you're saying it's a manageable scenario right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not new now. I think it's, if you ask me, last 12 to 15 months has continued to play like that, and we just got used to this.
Got it. And the second part was, on a couple of data points on the World Gold Council data. One was, it said that, exchange as a percentage has not dramatically gone up in spite of, prices going up so sharply, which means that, the new buyer growth might have been a little bit more surprising. It should have probably fallen off a little bit more in the industry. And the second was on the fact that the overall demand growth is in value terms is 3%. So, on these two points, you are growing far, far faster as you have been historically. Is that, has the shift kind of further accelerating, in this rising gold price environment towards organized players? And are you surprised that, you're still seeing buyer growth in spite of this dramatic increase in gold price and exchange has not dramatically gone up? So those are my questions. Thanks.
No, so exchange has gone up somewhat. If I look at this quarter four, the contribution of exchange has gone up by a couple of percentage points. That's one. New buyer growth, especially in gold, has flagged off. And certainly, as I said, in the lower price bands. So it's not that we are blazing away to new buyer growth in gold. No. In fact, quarter three, quarter four, it has been very muted. And therefore, higher growth in ticket size, which usually comes from higher repeat. So the skew between repeat and new has been there. Some of the overall new buyer growth percentage figures you're seeing is to do with the overall portfolio, because Mia has opened a lot of stores, etc. And that is giving us some benefit in the new buyer growth. So, but if I dissect it by brand and go into by store and channel, there is, and by category, there is a similar point as what World Gold Council has said. But exchange has gone up certainly in contribution by a couple of percentage points in quarter four.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tejas Shah from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a good set of numbers. So just one question to the team. So you mentioned that our wait and watch stance on LGD continues. Just to clarify, is the focus on assessing long-term customer relevance of this offering, or are we still evaluating the economic viability of the business model here?
I think it's both. The first one is certainly very important. What do customers think? And customers are not that clear. They are pretty confused, and many others, there are people who would like to experiment. There are people who are getting a little worried about the prices, and there are many new customers who come into diamond jewelry and want the authentic piece. They are not so confident. So right now, I would say, in the balance, there are many more people who are already diamond buyers who may be buying LGDs, and many new to the category are still a little hesitant. And I think the store of value that Venkat talked about pretty much plays up high in their mind. But definitely the customer piece is more important. Economic piece we can figure out once we know what the customer really wants and how it plays out. Economic piece is how we manage the business.
Okay. And is this read-through same across our engagement with customers here and abroad, or is it, it changes because the store of value understanding also changes?
Sorry, what is the question?
No, so is this read-through on customers, is it same across in India and abroad, or in abroad because the store of value dimension is different? Over there, it is slightly different than how we are reading customer in India and LGD.
at the moment, and Dini can add, at the moment, you know, our focus in the U.S., the most evolved market in our overall situation, Indians are more Indian in the U.S. than in India. And the store of value is quite pronounced there as well.
Sure. And lastly, are there any regional nuance that we would like to call out in this quarter's number in terms of north, south, or any read-through there on demand?
I think east and south continue to lead the growth, and west and north have been a little more sluggish. And within that, again, you know, west may be a little bit more than north has been sluggish. But that is, I think this, that seems to have been the trend of the current, the previous financial year that just ended 31st March.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks and all the best for coming quarters.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Moksh Ranka from Aurum Capital. Please go ahead.
So my question has been answered. You can move to the next.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek M. from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Good evening. Three questions from me. First, on LGD again, one more question. On the LGD side, is your worry, you know, more about, given you are the market leader in jewelry, you do not want to, let's say, create is the wrong word, I think, expand the market, because we have seen someone like, let's say, retailer like Trent, which has also entered into this. So is it more about, you know, you don't want to, in a way, cannibalize your own business by existing diamond business by, you know, creating more awareness? Is that the hesitation, reason for hesitation?
We are trying to understand what the customer wants, and frankly that is what guides us, and how is the customer thinking about it, and we are still seeing customers are a little unsure. Trent has got into it has purely an independent decision, and it's not something that, you know, that is not playing in our mind at all. We need to be clear what is the value proposition we need to offer to the customer. And at a next level, we need to be clear what will be the source of differentiation and continued competitive advantage in a category which could get very easily commoditized because of price. So these are important considerations for us. And I don't know whether you should call this hesitation or examining and reflecting as to what is the right thing to do.
Okay, and is your internal view also that that LGD will have no impact on, let's say, natural diamonds, or where you are on that bit?
Very difficult to answer that question, because the how it plays out will depend on whether new customers will the market expand. That's the big question. And if the market expands and penetration of diamonds, which is as low as 15% in our country, goes up even by a few percentage points, it can bring many new customers and it can be a win-win. In the short run, there may be a lot of ups and downs. The dust will settle somewhere. Very difficult to predict. Some pluses and minuses can happen, but I think we need to look at it over a slightly longer period and see where the dust will settle.
Got it. My second question is, you know, there are obviously, at least globally, whatever, and I have, you know, admittedly very limited understanding on this, but I hear that part of the reason why natural diamond prices actually went down were because of LGD. But what you know, there was a recent media article which said that natural diamond prices actually moved up 10%. I think this was in the month of March or April, end of March, I think. Do you have any insights as to, you know, what drove this change, and is that, you know, something more, I don't know, secular is the right word or not, but I would still use that. So is there something which is happening, which is why natural diamond prices moved up?
Again, I think it this reflects the wholesale prices of roughs, and again on the higher caratage segment. It is probably on the back of Chinese demand perhaps coming back. I don't have more insights on whether it will go further up or that was the bottom and from here on it's up. Difficult. Only, you know, the rough suppliers and what happens in international markets will really determine the price on that. Very difficult. I don't have an answer to your question. Sorry.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for that. My last question is on the sequential basis, you know, we have seen jewelry margins actually moving up, and Ajoy clarified that there is no major, you know, hedging impact because of which the margins have moved up. And our channel checks actually, you know, indicated in the last few months, given how gold prices moved up, especially in the fourth quarter fiscal, there was a lot of, you know, let's say, discounts or making charges, promotions given by regional players, local players. Why is it that, you know, this has not shown up in your numbers? What am I getting wrong over here?
See, the gross margins have been impacted because of the product mix. No question. I think Ashok did share a fair amount of, let's say, answers, observations on the fact that there's a mix of operating leverage and some hedging gains, contango, etc. So those pieces have probably, you know, played out in the, not probably, have played out in the EBIT margin percentages that you're seeing. Gross margins have certainly got impacted on two counts. One is product mix, the other is the price of gold itself, you know, playing a role in the studded margin line item level as well. You know, we've explained that earlier before, when prices of gold go up relative to diamonds, there is an impact on the gross margin for the studded jewelry line item itself. So combination of these two has impacted gross margins.
I see.
Sequential piece that my colleague here reminds me is also because the studded ratio in Q4 versus Q3 is different. Q3 is a rather more gold season. In Q4, we have a lot more diamonds. So that could be another factor playing.
Right. I mean, when I said sequentially, I mean, I was looking at all the rolling four quarters, for example. The only thing was what Ashok mentioned was there is no big impact of, you know, of any one-off on the EBIT side except the operating leverage, right? So in that context, basically the discounting or whatever we saw on the ground, it was minuscule compared to, or you did not face that pressure as much except for a slight impact on gross margins, which got offset at the, you know, let's say due to operating leverage. Is that a fair understanding?
Yeah, I think you are right.
Got it. Thank you very much. Very useful.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Venkatraman for closing comments.
Thank you very much for all those piercing questions and the encouragement as always. See you in the next quarter and good night.
Thank you. On behalf of Titan Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.